You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 484 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we're coming to you in separate locations this week. I am in Seattle, Washington, home of the AL West champion.
Hello.
Seattle Mariners.
There we go.
And
I'm coming from Renton, Washington, home of the DVOA champion Seattle Seahawks.
What a time to be alive. Let's just get right into the toast, because congrats to the Mariners.
It's funny that we're doing this now, because it's kind of like, that shit is so old. You know what I mean? The AL West is so over.
So many WNBA scandals since then.
That's what I was thinking of.
The Seattle Mariners, congrats to them. Congrats to Cal Raleigh, 60 home runs, and you somehow, congrats to you. You timed it, so you were there for both of those events occurring on the same night.
Take it, congrats. I had a feeling about this one, about this game being timed up, where there was something about where I was like, that Dodger series, like I could feel like it kind of doesn't matter. It's not going to matter. And it didn't, ultimately. That moment of seeing Cal Raleigh hit his 60th home run, right? I mean, it's like one of the greatest hitting moments in Mariners history. I feel like of any game that you could have been at, like I've been at like two of probably the five best games that you could have been at in Mariners games.
Huh. That's
even the one that we went to a couple of years ago where JP had the double to save that. Like that was like one of my favorite games. I think Cal hitting the homer to send the game, send the Mariners to the playoffs was a big one.
Yeah, that has to be there. Yeah, it often comes up in the Discord that the J.P. Crawford walk-off double was one of the all-time highest Mariners plays by championship probability added because of the way it kept their playoffs hopes alive. The fact that it did not ultimately result in them making the playoffs, alas, takes some of the air out of that one. I think, obviously, the game where they, I believe it was where they clinched the AL West in 2001, not long after 9/11, and paraded around the field after that game, has to be high up there.
I literally could not tell you a single moment from the 2001 season. Not one. I was thinking about how that, like, I'm sure that there probably were important moments that season.
I mean, we talk a lot
but
about
I'm not 100% certain. Frankly, I don't want to know.
Ichiro the throw, but obviously that occurred in Oakland. It's not like, that was a road game.
And it also just like one play, like that's like a cool play, but like, it's not the same as like 60th home run and clinching the AL West time since 1970.
It's 1970. Wow. It's been a minute. Before the team even existed. The Seattle Pilots won it in absentia in 1970, apparently.
Anyway, I think what we all should be saying, we should quote our friend Jay Buhner with, fuck the wild card. And
fuck the wild card. It was so fast how it went from, gee, I hope the Mariners make the playoffs, to, wait, the Mariners are going to win the division, huh? The Astros are going to miss the playoffs? The Mariners are going to get a bye? I was sitting there on
press row. I will tell you how close it got that we all of a sudden started thinking about the one seed.
For a minute there, we sure did. I was sitting there on press row in Vegas last night for Aces Fever Game 5, and
Can't wait to hear this name drop is.
Sabrina Merchant of The Athletic was streaming the Dodgers Reds game during the Aces Fever game. And I was like, man, what a great
wild
life.
Card series. Couldn't be me.
Kicking back, waiting to see who's going to win this Tigers Guardians series, what's going to go on with the Yankees Red Sox, and what that means for the start time on Saturday. But
have fun with your little Dodgers.
You know, what have they ever won? Couldn't be me.
They also did win their division. So,
but
for
not
them,
a
it's
bye.
Fuck the wild card
not
round.
A bye.
Fuck the wild card round.
Yeah. I would go for that.
Oh, a Dodgers fan. Hope the wild card round goes well for you, buddy. That's awesome, Mariners fans now.
This is not a toast that I expected to give in the context of the previous Mariners toast. But congrats to the Seattle Sounders on clinching their 16th playoff appearance in 17 MLS
Wow.
season, and their first ever that coincides with a Mariners playoff run. We have done it, people. The curse is over.
It's
We have
almost like
broken
curses
it.
don't exist.
And yet, UW football and UW men's basketball still never good at the same time.
Oh, just wait.
No,
Just wait.
there was the one year where Hop won the Pac-12. I think it was
And they
also
didn't even make the NCAA
UW.
tournament, I think.
No, that was earlier. The football team was not good that season. I don't think. Maybe they were okay. I guess that was a pretty good combined year. But it was the Keith Price down year. It was 2012. But UW won the conference in both men's basketball and football in the same season in 2000, whatever year that 19, I suppose, 18, 19. So we did have that 1 year overlap, as we now do with the Mariners and Sounders. Congrats to Dominique Malunga, who was named to the WNBAL rookie team earlier this week. Love to see
Tell me more.
it.
I honestly didn't even know. So you didn't vote for Dom in the all-rookie team?
I
Is
didn't
this a
know.
thing? Is this a bit that you have?
No, it's not a bit.
Do you pride yourself on not voting for players from Seattle who either play or are from Seattle for rookie of the year or all-rookie team?
I pride
You get
myself
off on that?
on treating them the same as all other players.
This, you are
And the
literally, you are
evidence showed
probably
that.
the least biased person in all of sports media.
The evidence showed that Monique Okawamakane had a stronger rookie season for the Phoenix Mercury now
Are
than
you like,
any
you're
other
Noel Quinn
WNBA
basically in disguise? You're like, she's not that
fun.
good.
She was awesome in the second half of the season, but it's a full season award.
It is actually incredible, right? But because it's not that. You do it out of spite. You know, you're not like an old man sports writer who's just like, ah, oh, these kids, I don't want to give this to them. You are literally just so deeply objective about this that you are unmoved by having watched basically every single minute of Dominique Malunga play this season.
I mean, I'm not unmoved by it. Again, part of it is just that, like, people think of these rookie awards much more as a projection. So, like, do I think Dominique Malunga is going to have a better career than
Oh, you also have a
Monica Connie?
perspective about it too.
I
Cool.
mean, I have the perspective of the award. It's the rookie of the year. It's not the prospect of the year. It's rookie
This
of
is
the
the
year.
WNBA all rookie team, though.
Yeah, same thing. We're rewarding the players who had the best rookie seasons. So,
Trying to think of what a good example would be like. The problem is you would always vote against me, so that's not a good example. You
what do you
never vote
mean?
for yourself for MVP, though, do you?
No,
See, I guess it's the
but
same
I
thing.
definitely don't vote for
That's
you either.
yeah, fair enough. That's how you get into the situation of me being the MVP for the entire year, back to back. I'm coming for
Think I voted for abandoned searches the 1 year.
it. I abstained.
It had an amazing year, I gotta say.
It's not a projection of who's going to be the best, the MVP of the Pelton cast the next year. The abandoned search did a quality of work for the last season.
abandoned search continues to be. No, we have not abandoned the cookie search. The
We
famous
better
cousin
not.
Katie, she keeps ducking us.
Oh yeah, we didn't actually try.
No, not this week. There's a lot going on. So we're gonna have to kick it until after the hiatus, which is coming. It is real. It is not a bit.
Are we going to talk about that after?
I mean, we can talk about it here. We'll not be recording the next 2 weeks,
I got a
so.
lot of problems with you people. I think some
Well,
people thought that there was like actually a feud going on between us, and they're
then the
right.
site crashed, which I
Oh,
still
the
got to get to the
site
bottom of
crashed.
why that happened.
Wow.
But it's back now. We're good.
We're back.
It reset at the start of October.
The thing that I wanted to comment on, which is how good you are at timing things.
Okay.
You're just really, really good at it. And so you timed your wedding the same day as the Super Bowl. And not even like the same day, like in the morning, literally like halftime of the Super Bowl. You decided to time your wedding. A reception or whatever. That was your actual wedding. Your reception opposite a UW home football game at
I mean,
basically the exact same start time.
it was UC Davis.
Still, the point remains. And then this time you're like, there will be nothing going on in sports in Seattle, Washington in October.
You know,
Meanwhile, the best baseball team in the country, the best football team in the country, playoff soccer, the beginning of Husky basketball season.
I'm not missing playoff soccer.
Okay, I'll you're back for playoff them. Soccer.
And I'm only
the
missing,
playoff push.
I'm only actually out of the country for one Seahawks game.
Okay,
it's,
fair enough.
It's the Mariners are the issue here. I am missing UW Rutgers. So, you know, we'll see how much I regret.
We may
that.
All be missing UW Rutgers.
Oh, no.
Depending on how it goes for the Mariners. Also, people, there's the amount of people that when I got tickets for Game 5 who were like, there won't even need to be a Game 5. I would like to introduce you to this year's Wild Card Series.
I mean, it's not like it's interesting that there have not been Game 3s in the past Wild Card Series. Like, two of the three teams that won the Game 2s so far today were, like, clear favorites to do it, right? I mean, the Yankees are the best team in the AL. It's not surprising that they won a game.
That is the point that I'm making, though, is that you can lose games. Like, people were like, the Mariners are the best team. They're just going to win three games, then comfortably move on. And I'm like...
I see. Okay. Yes, no, that makes sense.
How cute you are.
How quaint. Are you not familiar with Seattle Mariners history? All right,
I just got a text from one of Luca's baseball teammates that said, are you looking for something?
It's a very open-ended question, I gotta say. All right, lastly this week, we want to congratulate Adam Bartz for winning the PeltonCast Fantasy Baseball League with the Sasaki suitcases. So, haven't played fantasy baseball in a while, but love to see it up and going. Shouts to third Pelton brother Noah Cohen for running that league, and congrats to Adam Bartz on his success this year.
I'm fascinated to find out what I'm looking for. They responded, what is it?
With that, it's time for a playoff edition of your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at ya.
It's time to talk about fate. Because in 2025, for the first time in baseball history, it's shining upon Seattle, Washington. This happens too. At certain times, the stars align themselves to break not curses, but unfortunate half centuries, let's call them. I think when considering the 2025 Mariners, you need to think about how this team fits within the context of every great baseball and sports team in Seattle history. For previous playoffs, it was too soon. Fans and the organization alike were happy to get a taste. In 95, they were the plucky upstarts, Hall of Famers spread throughout the roster, but none of them at quite the right stage of their career, and a roster and bullpen which wasn't deep enough to seriously contend for a series. They achieved the most in Mariners history at the time. But we know there was a satisfaction in Seattle just to be there. In 97, it was a cobbled together group of stars and journeymen. Someone named Roberto Kelly led the team in win probability added in the playoffs. And Mike Messina comfortably eradicated them, out-dueling a firing young big unit who hadn't fully figured it out his stuff until he was in the desert. In 2000, they ran into a wrecking ball Yankees team, which, despite their regular season record, was not going to be beaten. They've immortalized it in the 2011 film Moneyball starring Brad Pitt for further reading. But if they beat the Moneyball A's, David Bell wasn't stopping them. In 2001, excitement was high in Seattle, but fate had another idea. It was a good overall roster, but didn't have a hitting star who could shine on the biggest stage possible and didn't have the pitching staff that they thought they did. And in the intervening 20 years, the city grew and changed, and we as sports fans suffered. A Super Bowl loss in 2005, a franchise loss in 2008, a winless Husky football season, but built real history, real culture that wasn't there in 1995 or 2001. It was too soon for Seattle to host a World Series. To be a team of fate, your history has to include some quirks along the way. The 2016 Cubs don't happen without Steve Bartman. Russell Wilson doesn't happen without Mike Holmgren. And Lord knows the Mariners franchise has had some quirks. John Boyce made a whole documentary about it. But 2025 is an addendum to the history of the Seattle Mariners. The one where fate finally shines upon them. And you could feel it develop over these past few years too. There was hand-wringing, of course. But a roster like this is meant to play on the biggest stage possible. led by the breakout season for the Big Dumper, a bat, and a booty, which was written in the stars. After a season which saw him become the second Mariner to win the home run derby in the Peach State that begged for his emoji, he hit 60 home runs, breaking record after record along the way, all while playing nearly flawless catcher behind the plate. The Big Dumper doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. He belongs in the Louvre because he's a work of art. The most fun outfield in the league. Even if you're a praying mantis, you want to stop by for a view. But you need the young homegrown center fielder star. More home runs in his first 4 years than Ken Griffey Jr. and the smoothest swing we've seen since. A Cuban-born left fielder who reminds us constantly that the sport should be fun, while settling in as the leadoff man for one of the best WRC Plus teams in the game. An anchor at shortstop, the longest tenured Mariner, who somehow is just as comfortable leading off or hitting ninth, and a surprisingly powerful hitter as well. Hit a dinger in extras that may have saved the season. A redemption story at second base. 2024 Jorge walked, so 2025 Jorge could run. The best hitter out of the gate of the season, who carried them through April and extended it with another hot end of the summer. The new guy, Josh Naylor, 250 pounds of base-stealing prowess, who immediately settled in at first base. It felt like he was here all along. His booty not to be undersold. He and Cal could be called the Ass Brothers. And of course, the prodigal son had to return. Sadly cast away, but fate needed the vibes at third base in Seattle in 2025. Pair this with a pitching staff that only needs four aces in the playoffs. And good news, they have 4 starters who have a better FIP than anyone on the 2001 staff. Suck it, Paul Abbott. A bullpen headed by the best closer and best setup man in Mariners history, lefty specialist, and guess motherfucking what? Emerson Hancock is back, and he throws flames now. And finally, can't forget our brethren. Our boy Dom, who again had to earn it. Sent down for much of the season, came back with a tear, and has 47,000 strong standing up and saying, Mamma Mia! It's a roster with no holes, no thread to pull, and it's happening at the exact right time in history. Fate has aligned somehow for the Seattle Mariners. You can mark the calendar for September 24th, 2025, as the day I knew for sure. I had an inkling, but that night in the J-Rod squad, I looked around at the entire stadium chanting, MVP, MVP for the future MVP at the plate. And he absolutely delivered a 60th home run in a perfect situation that confirmed to me this is our year. And after the game, for the second night in a row, he of course said it best. So as we stand on the brink of the 2025 playoffs and the most important one in Mariners history, we may as well go and win the whole fucking thing.
Wow. Well, I almost want to like do that as a video. Like, we need highlights over that with your impassioned history of the Mariners in tribute to the 2025 team. One of the things I liked, so I didn't really listen to your season opening hot takes until I put it in the episode well after we had recorded. And you did say in there, look, I can't just say no holes because that's my bet. I have to believe, I have to look at the roster. I have to see Tommy La Stella at DH and know there are no holes. And obviously you have looked at this Mariners roster and, like many others, have concluded that is the case with the 2025 Seattle Mariners.
I mean, it's true. It is true with this
all
roster.
All the holes now play for the Rangers.
I was thinking about how not only does this roster have no holes, they have the third best farm system in baseball. Like, it reminds me the most. I didn't want to do this just about them. You remember 2012. We all remember 2012. And the team started a little slow, didn't they? But got real hot toward the end. And a team that not only was the best team in the NFL at that point, delivered on the Super Bowl, but still were young. They still had years and years and years after that. And that's what this Mariners roster feels like. They just had the third pick in the draft like 2 months ago. It has not been that long. They have better players in the minors than they have in the majors at a lot of positions. So things are looking very good for baseball in the city of Seattle.
And the good news is that never ends poorly. To that point about the future, we saw some of it. So the Mariners are holding a pair of 6-inning scrimmages. They held one Wednesday afternoon.
Is Ichiro the future? Does he think he's the future?
Ichiro is...
We saw some of that this week.
Ichiro is the
with
alpha.
With their 48-year-old right fielder.
He's the alpha and the omega. He is past, present, and future. Ichiro has always been and will always be. No, I was referring to Colt Emerson.
51 years old. Sorry. I undersold him.
He's part of the taxi squad for the Mariners in the playoffs after advancing all the way from starting the year at Everett, a high A ball, making it by the end to Triple A with Tacoma, playing 6 games for them and hitting 364 with 2 home runs in 9 RBI in the 6 games.
How many tickets did they sell to this? Like, it looks pretty empty there.
I mean, probably like 5,000 to 10,000 somewhere in there. I mean, maybe not even that, but 5,000.
Wow, it's actually more emptier than I thought. Here's what I'll say. I can't tell how I feel on this between seeing how empty it was. I can't side on shameless money grab. Maybe failed shameless money grab. Because why were they charging for this?
I think they were donating it, right?
They said also, a portion of, and I know what a portion of means.
I do know that too. I mean, there may be some legal reasons around it. Like, you remember when we've done...
We can't have baseball for free in this town. I'm the mayor, and I say you have to charge for baseball.
When we've done the Mariners...
The beach will stay open, thank you. What do you mean a legal reason?
When we've done the Mariners pregame...
They own the stadium, don't they?
Before you go to Seahawks games, when you go over to...
That they have
T-Mobile
to charge
Park.
A dollar? I think that's alcohol related.
I do believe that's alcohol related. So the $10 is probably not that, but there could be something about that. Anyways, you don't have to attend.
No young man shall see baseball for free in Seattle, Washington.
I don't know why this is associated with someone from the 1920s.
It's like a Conan O'Brien thing or something, I feel. Okay, I have one other thought on it, though.
Is there a top hat involved? Suspenders, maybe? Anyway, Colt Emerson is 8 years.
I kind of give credit to Ichiro, though, because no one can deny, whether it may be kind of sad at this point, Ichiro does love ball.
No one has ever argued that.
That is what I will say. You can poke holes in his career, his stats, but you can't poke holes in whether Ichiro Suzuki loves ball. That is a matter of fact. He is out there. They called him up. They were like, you're 51. You want to go play ball? He was like, fuck yes. I am there. He probably didn't do the Savannah Bananas because it wasn't serious enough ball for him.
Oh, 100% he didn't for that reason.
He was like, how dare we make a mockery out of the sport?
He's too busy pitching in Japan.
Yeah.
Against high schoolers.
And I will say, this is a situation. I'm for it. I am for it.
It's hard to dispute.
My problems are not with Ichiro personally. Ichiro personally, I think it's kind of fun.
Colt Emerson he's 20 years old. 7.8 years below the average age of PCL players.
And 31 years below the age of the Mariners starting right fielder.
It is fun to have the two of them out there together, I would say. So, as I mentioned earlier at the top, the Mariners will face the winner of the Guardians and Tigers series. That series going to Game 3 on Thursday in Cleveland, which is obviously ideal to have the winner of that series, whoever it is, tested to the limits, their bullpen in particular. They will have a day off before the ALDS starts on Saturday in Seattle, but you prefer that to a 2-game sweep that, for whatever reason, we have often seen in the past. So presumably they'll be forced to start their number 4 starter in Game 1 based on the rest situation, and then would have the opportunity to start their number 1 in Game 2 on Sunday, and then a potential Game 5 on Friday. So kind of really important for the Mariners to start this series off with a win, given that advantage and how they're able to set up their rotation. Game 1 start time still TBD, depending on the outcome of the Yankees-Red Sox series And whether that game is going to be in prime time or not, game two, though, we do know is set for Sunday at 5:08 p.m. after the conclusion of Seahawks Buccaneers next door at Lumen Field.
I mean, we think.
What do you mean?
You
Oh, you're saying the
said
game could be delayed.
it as if it's like matter of fact, like once it ends, we don't know when it's gonna end. We
A
saw a game on
four-hour.
Sunday that went pretty long.
I guess that's true.
We're all cheering for a tie. Us and Matt LaFleur. Were you watching that? Did you have any idea that was going on?
Was driving to Portland and forgot to put it on the radio. So, nope, had zero idea until not even until Monday morning. So,
Wow, Monday morning?
because I went to bed so that I could be up for Blazers Media Day with my close personal friend, Young Hansen. See,
How's Yong?
I know you're not paying attention because you did not make a joke about that. He's doing well, improving English. Answered a few questions in English. The majority of them using a translator. Other players raved about what they'd seen from him in pre-training camp workouts. So it's going to be very intriguing to see what that translates into this season. But that's not what we're here to discuss. Jerry Dipoto credited the Braves and the former Braves coaches on the Mariners staff, including hitting coach Kevin Seitzer, for putting together their game plan for how to handle the 5-day break, including those two scrimmages. And then the other big thing that's going to happen on
I'm
Thursday.
so close to doing the voice again.
Oh, please do it. Oh, can't wait. Brian Wu throwing
Seitzer was like, get Ichiro in here.
it.
That'll prepare us for the
Why is Ichiro the old-timey mayor? I don't understand. Does everyone just talk in this voice in this reality? I mean, certainly the media members do.
absolutely.
Ichiro, tell us about the game. Can you give us an exclusive quote? That's actually what I asked Young Hansen. No,
He's
Brian
like,
Wu.
I'm not very good at English yet. Why are you talking like that? How press talks here, kid.
Wears a fedora with press in the brim. See? Brian Wu will be throwing a bullpen session on Thursday for the first time since he dealt with pectoral soreness. That's a crucial marker as we project ahead to him potentially being available to start for the Mariners in the ALCS. But they will have to decide on Saturday morning their 26-player roster for the
Do you
series.
have a preference on who they play? No, you're not going to see any of this, of course, so it doesn't really matter to you. But do you have a
No,
preference
I'm
on?
going to see game one. Game two, I'll be able to follow on the plane. It'll be great.
Yeah, but they actually might play games after that.
Oh,
I meant for the next two series, not just this next series.
jeez. You're penciling in two series?
I'm not penciling in two series, but like
Knock on
to
wood.
me, I'm like, you have to beat the Yankees. How many times have the Mariners made the playoffs?
This would be the fifth time in sixth time in franchise history? Sixth time.
They have to conquer the Yankees, to me.
I mean, they did beat them literally the first playoff series they ever played. So they got
That is
that going for
true.
them. It's
That is
just
true.
in the ALCS.
I feel like it's like a rite of passage. Like if they again, this is like the most Mariners shit of all time that I'm thinking, where I'm like, I don't want it to be too easy to win the World Series for the team that's never been, but like we'll take it. And there's going to be a good team on the other side of the bracket, no matter what. Like basically, like the Mariners are favored. They are the favorite to win the World Series per Fangraphs because their chances of making it are the highest. Is that still correct?
I believe so. I'd have to double check where the
Problem
Dodgers
is
are
when we
at
get to
these
late
days.
October, even if the Mariners are the representative for the AL, they're not going to be the favorite anymore.
Interesting. The Mariners' odds went down today. That's kind of strange.
They probably saw fucking Ichiro out there.
The Dodgers are ahead of them, having won game one. I think they're trailing in game two right now. I
They're the
don't.
favorite in the AL, though. And but by the time that if the Mariners were even to make the World Series, they all of a sudden would not be the favorite anymore. So there's no way that they kind of like
I
back
mean,
into.
unless the Reds made the World Series.
Yeah, maybe.
The Red Stockings, they made it to the World Series. Extra, extra. Read all about it.
That's not going to happen. You know that, right?
I am aware. They
Okay.
are leading 2-1 in the middle of the fourth here as we record this on Wednesday night.
No way the Dodgers are going to score a run.
yeah, so. I mean, yes, my preference is to not play Tarek Skubal in a best of five series. I think that's my preference, as much as we all enjoy a homecoming story.
I'm mostly indifferent on the first round. Neither team is fun to play, if that makes sense.
I mean, Cleveland, there is a fair bit of postseason history with too. The Mariners have played
When you're the
them.
Mariners, series counts as po a fair bit of
No, they played
postseason
them
history.
twice.
Ooh, two times.
I believe in 2001, I want to say they played them
I
in
love that we're just
the
like any team we've ever played. We're like, well, we play them all the time when we make playoff.
I mean, I don't say that about Baltimore. It's got to be at least twice.
Yeah.
I mean, the Yankees are three times. That's a lot.
They've never played the Red Sox, is that right?
No.
So seeing the Red Sox as an option was kind of like, huh, I don't even know what that looks like. That's what it's like being a Mariners fan. You can't even picture them playing playoff series against certain teams.
I mean, I can picture it.
I don't know if
It
I can.
probably looks very similar to them playing against each other in the regular season or playing against other teams in the playoffs. You know, it's not like an exclusive Photoshop of the Mariners and Reds. Let's ask AI to generate what it would look like. Might it become like the future if we did such and such, where it's like flying cars and something? That's the Mariners Red Sox playing in the playoffs somehow. Fenway Park is in space
Probably not going
now.
to happen. The seriously though, like the roster is set for this point, and you know the Mariners
Roster is not set, but you're saying it's built for this point?
is built for this particular situation. And you know, if the Tigers have Skubal, obviously he's a better pitcher than anybody on the Mariners staff, and he out of any pitcher who is in the playoffs, Skubal is the scariest pitcher remaining in the league, basically at this point. But just how deep the Mariners staff is, and I think at this point underrated. You know, looking at those FIPs, and granted, like their ERAs aren't as amazing, but looking at those FIPs from those four
Well,
starters that
the
the Mariners
FIP
have.
also is not park adjusted, as we've talked about in the past.
I
So if
still
we
don't.
looked strictly at road games, it probably would not be nearly as strong.
I suppose so. I mean, is T-Mobile that extreme of a pitcher's park this year?
I don't think it stopped becoming a pitcher's park.
Seems to
I can
not have
look.
affected the Mariners.
No, it has affected the Mariners. They're just good enough to overcome it, I guess I would say. I mean, also the other thing about it is we have not seen the coldest part of the season. The marine layer has not been in evidence for a long period of time here, and I'm seeing some marine layer the last couple of days
But
that
this is what I say to everybody when they complain about elements. Both teams play in the elements. It's not like if they're playing the Tigers are playing in balmy Detroit spring weather or something. You know,
it
it's
was.
not 100 degrees in the summer if they play the Yankees. Both teams are playing in the same elements.
It was still tied for the best hitters or pitcher's park in baseball this year with Globe Life Field, which is still kind of bizarre that that plays as such a pitcher's park. Let's see here in terms of strikeouts. Yeah, it still elevated them more than any other park in baseball. They were
Really?
14% above league average. The next highest was Daikin Park in Houston at 10%. No other
Okay, so
park
here's my
above
question about the
7%.
2001 Mariners then. Their staff basically wasn't very good
No.
overall. And that does seem to be an important flaw for a team. Granted, they won all the games in the regular season, but like pitching matters a lot in the playoffs. And
Yes.
high-end pitching matters a lot in the playoffs. And
What was the
also,
question?
randomness matters a lot in the playoffs. So.
I mean, it's very amusing to me. Obviously, I've been back in for a period of time, watched some playoff games in 2022, but hearing all the discussion about, home runs or what wins in the playoffs is so funny as someone who checked out around the Moneyball era, where it was all very much like, oh, Billy Bean shit doesn't work in the playoffs.
I think
But
they just
then,
kind of got unlucky for a couple of years. Like,
I mean,
there's
when
nothing
Billy Bean
about.
said my shit doesn't work in the playoffs, what he meant
Yeah, but
is it's too random for me to have any control over, not that the
sure.
style of play doesn't work. But people took it as the style of play doesn't work because they don't bunt, which Dan
I think
Wilson's
they just.
got taken care of. He's got it
Yeah,
on lock.
we're good. We're good. got bunting down. I mean, they do the little things, but they also hit for power. Like, I don't,
Yeah.
there's not a thing that the Mariners don't do.
That's
Well, the
what it
defense is the
means to
thing
have
they
no
don't do
holes.
very well, but
But yeah, watching the Dodgers last night, I mean, following that game along with that game, two homers from Shohei, two from Teo. It's certainly an example of that axiom. So, anything else on the Mariners?
It's going to be fun. It comes very quickly. I mean, even thinking about this wild card series. I mean, I was thinking about this when the Mariners played the Blue Jays years ago. Like, if you've been paying attention for such a long season and then it's just like instant, boom, 3 games and it's over, 2 games and it's over. It
Even the
can happen
five
very
games
quickly.
in the Astros series, despite the fact that they essentially played four games, thanks to how long game three went, it still felt like it ended super fast. So.
So I guess that's the other thing is just enjoy it. You know, I mean, for you, the game that you see.
I'm going to enjoy reading the recaps when I get up in the morning.
Where are
I'm
you
very
going
curious.
to?
Paris, San Sebastian, and Barcelona.
Oh, interesting. Pronounced that wrong, but
No, it is not a TH
that's okay.
in Catalan. It is in Castilian, but there's a reason their nickname is Barça and not Bartha. Roundup, I guess. Well, Will, I'm gone. Seattle Kraken will open the regular season a week from Thursday, hosting
Wow.
Anaheim and Vegas in a brief homestand before setting out on a six-game East Coast swing that will still be going by the time I'm back. Kraken 2-2-1 so far in preseason ahead of their final game Wednesday night, hosting Edmonton. The bad news, health front, winger Kaapo Kakko suffered a broken hand last Wednesday, is expected to miss 6 weeks. They also lost defenseman Ryker Evans to an upper body injury that will sideline him 6 to 8 weeks. So a team that didn't necessarily have that much depth in the first place, losing some. We're not quite into like full season preview mode. There was nothing on ESPN yet, but the consensus is the Kraken will again be near the West Cellar and the fourth lowest overall points projection in the NHL from The Athletic. Also on the hockey front, the PWHL schedule is out. The expansion Seattle team will open their inaugural season November 21st at Vancouver before hosting their home opener on November 28th at Climate Pledge Arena against the two-time reigning champion Minnesota Frost, who of course hoisted the Walter Cup, which, yes, is a cup, although
Is
not a very
named is
large
yes
cup.
named after Walter.
The founders of the league are the Walters. It's not as good of a story, I don't think, as like just a guy named Lord Stanley donating a cup to this hockey competition. Seattle Sounders, who play for an uncreatively named, unclear if I guess MLS Cup you can drink out of. I think it's a real cup. So they clinched on Saturday thanks to results elsewhere, ended up drawing against the Vancouver Whitecaps. After a scoreless first half, the teams traded four goals in a span of less than 20 minutes, with the Whitecaps taking a lead in the 52nd minute. Sounders answered with goals a minute apart just after from Jackson Reagan and Albert Rushnack to take the lead, but then conceded again in the 69th minute to share the points. More injuries for the Sounders, who didn't need more of those. Both Alex Roldan and Yimer Gomez Andrade left in the first 20 minutes of Saturday's match. Roldan's injury not as serious as feared, as he tweaked his hip per Brian Schmetzer, could be available this Saturday. Yaimar has a hamstring strain with an expected return date in 4 weeks, right as the MLS Cup playoffs start. Realistically, Sounders have no chance of a top four seed in hosting the best of three miniseries. They're 7 points back of LAFC with 3 matches to play, and LAFC actually has four to gain the 3 points necessary to clinch outright. Instead, Saturday's derby match against the Portland Timbers is about avoiding dropping lower in the standings. The Timbers are 2 points back, tied with Austin, which, like the Sounders, has a match in hand on Portland. The Sounders need 1 point from their final 3 matches to assure avoiding the 8-9 play-in matchup. So almost certainly going to finish somewhere between fifth and seventh, where you actually want to finish, TBD, depending on where LAFC ends up in the top half of the bracket. Better news bracket-wise for Rain, who, after falling behind in 1-0 in the 57th minute on Sunday at home against the North Carolina Courage, answered with a pair of late goals, scoring an own goal to equalize in the 71st and getting the winner from Matty Dahlin in the 81st. That was the only shot on goal for the Reign, who took just three shots period as they held little of the ball, but came away with full points and nevertheless are improbably fourth in the MWSL standings, a game behind Gotham FC for third, ahead of Sunday's showdown between the two teams in New Jersey. Gotham has really been a tier ahead of the other teams battling out from third through seventh, which are separated by just 3 points with four matches apiece remaining. Gotham's plus 13 goal differential, best of that group, while the Reign rank last at plus two.
I have some urgent and horrifying news.
What's that?
The Dodgers have scored two runs.
Oh, no. Two runs?
Yeah, it's over.
Starting to think they might be good. Wow, they didn't even need a home run to do it. Wild. All right, Seattle Storm news. So I tagged this into last week's podcast between when we recorded it and when it came out, but the New York Liberty fired Sandy Brondello as head coach, something that obviously did not
you did
come
you
as...
you solo added something into the podcast?
Yeah, it was like 20 seconds
without me knowing.
Well, you have to listen to the pod to know.
How was I need to be informed of changes that are happening in the Pelton cast? I honestly didn't even know you were leaving. And somebody was like, is there actually a hiatus? And I was like, no, there's no hiatus. And you were like, yes, there is. And I was like, what? I was like, no, we're just joking, guys. No way there's going to be a what?
We're just having fun here.
You must have mentioned it. I didn't hear that you were leaving. And then I think we're not going to Disneyland.
At some point. Huh?
I think maybe we're not going to Disneyland.
Well, you never bring it up. I don't know what to tell you.
How many times do I have to fucking bring it up?
You have to bring it up at some point when the famous Cousin Katie is around and we can actually plan it. So maybe this spring.
We just keep pushing back a season.
We do. Well, the Seattle Storm might keep pushing back a season as well. But so Sandy Brondello, you know, as I said, we talked about this last week, the possibility that the Liberty might fire her, the possibility that Sonia Roman and Sandy Brondello could be somewhat tied. I think that's less likely now. We've seen a variety of candidates for the Liberty coaching job. One of them, former Nets assistant Will Weaver, someone who doesn't have WNBA experience. There's also talk that they could go after a big name from the women's college ranks, you know, with their financial resources, something that's probably not as likely an outcome for the Storm. But Sandy Brondello, I think, shoots to the top of the candidate list immediately for the Storm. This is someone with extensive playoff experience, has, you know, won championships with both the Phoenix Mercury and with New York Liberty in just a year ago, took both of those teams to the finals, has coached in three of the four most recent WNBA finals between those two teams. You know, I do think, like, it is a little bit of a concern that the Liberty were so eager to move on from her after an injury-plagued season, and that their GM, Jonathan Coe, really highlighted that he claimed they even considered this coaching change last year after they won the championship, which is a little hard to believe. But again, Sandy Brondello, tremendous experience, tremendous credibility around the league, someone who knows a lot of the players on the Storm's roster, coached Skylar Diggins her first two seasons in Phoenix, including that aforementioned finals trip in 2021, has coached as a Magpie goer for an extended period of time and gotten her best play as part of the Australian, is head coach of the Australian national team. So, you know, I think there's a lot of logic to this. Now, part of it is they're not the only team that's going to be interested in Sandy Brondello, surely. The Dallas Wings, earlier this week, just yesterday, fired Chris Koklanis after one season at the helm. You know, not the kind of organization in facilities that the Storm have, but they do have Paige Beckers to offer, and that's, you know, an attractive option for a coach. We've got the...
We know you would prefer that option.
I mean, Paige Beckers is really good. She averaged 19 points a game this year.
Yeah, no, we know. We understand. Look, we get where your priorities lie.
They both made the all-rookie team. There's room for all of them.
Not for you, not on your ballot. Hashtag not my ballot.
And then we have the expansion franchises, Portland and Toronto, both out there looking for a head coach as well. So we'll be interested to see how quickly this moves. I think probably Sandy Brondello. We'll see. Maybe New York is the first domino, but I think Sandy Brondello is probably the domino for these other teams as they consider their head coaching options, and she considers her options.
She's just going to be the coach of the Storm. Come on, we know it.
She's the betting favorite right now. As soon as that happened, she became the betting favorite. Not that there actually is a market for this, but if there were, she would be the favorite.
I don't know if I take much from the Liberty saying that they're considering moving on after. Like, sometimes people just do dumb things.
Also, sometimes people just say stuff. I mean, I do think they're
That's true. Can confirm.
people just be saying stuff
Yeah,
sometimes.
I've said so many things.
So I don't like, I think you're still going to want to go through the process. If you're the Storm, you're still going to want to talk to other candidates. But I do think it would take like a really impressive interview or really impressive background for someone else to surpass Brondello, just given all of those factors. And I do think they are the most attractive coaching job available other than New York, which probably not going to hire Sandy Brondello. It would be a strange, bold choice if they did.
They'd fire her if she won 10 championships. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but like all of this stuff is known going in when you're talking about WNBA head coaches.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's not like you could show up and it's not, like you're hiring for like a project manager and somebody's like, wow, I was really blown away by them.
People
Like,
do hire people off the coaches off of their interviews. I don't know that that's necessarily a good strategy. I mean, sometimes you are surprised, I suppose. I'm trying to think of a good upstart candidate who has
it's just
really.
a league of like eight teams, like the things are very well known.
Well, it's not that it's more than it's been always been more than eight for since 1997, but
It's
it's a lot
it's
more than.
an even smaller pool than say like the NFL
And Sandy
when
Brondello did, like, not that there's anyone left from this other than me, but she did play for the Storm during her final WNBA season. So
did you
that
say
was.
not that there's anybody left for this except for me?
I mean,
Do
you'll
you are
be.
you saying what are you saying here? Because you
I'm
don't
not,
work for the team
but
anymore.
I'm still
Are you
around.
saying you're the only Storm fan since then?
No, but
The only person in Storm orbit?
even the media has, I guess Mark Muschietti is still part of the media. So there's two of
Wow,
us.
there's cockroaches, Keith Richards, and ESPN senior writer Kevin Belton
Don't know if I
voting
go that
against
far.
their own players.
I don't know if I go that well. They're probably not going to hire me now.
Do they know?
It depends if they listen to the podcast. The votes are not made public. Not even the vote
Oh,
totals
this
are public.
podcast?
Yes.
Oh, I've got some good news for you then.
I also have that good
Depends
news.
if they listen. I guarantee you the Storm do not listen. Although if they did, they made the right call. Look, they heard. They're like that MVP is saying something. He's not saying it explicitly, but we know what he's saying. And I was like, yep. Not the MVP for nothing. Quote, Seattle Storm.
You can't make up quotes and attribute them to the
Oh,
Seattle
sorry,
Storm.
sorry, sorry. Wait. This was meant as parody. We're good.
Protected his satire.
Yeah, we're good. Don't worry. No need to delete that.
Do you want to do the transition?
To what?
The say, speaking of people be saying things.
Speaking of people be saying things, we spent like 5 hours in between doing that transition.
That's
I
always
said
the
so
best
many
transition.
things in between there, most of them
You
about
did,
taco time.
but not as many things
I
about
went on like a
how.
5-minute-long mile monologue about a classic burrito at taco time.
And it's like indisputably accurate, but not as many of those things were about the Huskies being 50-50 to beat the nation's number one team. You stand by it?
I'm sad.
The look you make really doesn't translate to the podcast
Everybody heard
format.
the look I made.
Oh
How about that? It does.
no. For one, it certainly 28 glorious minutes, right up until the 2 minute timeout. Certainly, it was looking like everything was coming up, Tristan, as the Huskies led that game 3-0. And for much of the game, it looked reasonable to think that they could beat Ohio State at home, especially before Ohio State figured out that they just needed to run short passes over and over again, spam short passes. You can jump in any time here, or
I don't
just
know if
making
I
facial
can.
gestures.
I don't know if I can.
But ultimately, the Buckeyes comfortably covering the spread in a 24-6 win that featured some mistakes that have been common to the Jed Fish era, I
Here,
think.
here's I have We talked about this throughout the game.
We did.
There's
the
like,
various points you were angry at me.
oh, there was the whole day.
Were you angry when I gave you some of my Poliachi money?
No, that was until the game was over. I
Okay.
wasn't really angry at you after the game.
Mm
It's funny because the penalties don't look that lopsided. I mean, Ohio State was penalized for more yards than the Huskies were in this game in the end. I feel like the penalties were more devastating for the Huskies than they were for Ohio State. Like the impact of them was much greater. The numbers that are going to stand out here, and what I will say is, despite the fact, like total yardage ended up being way skewed toward Ohio State. And obviously, like
yes.
Huskies were in like desperation mode near the end. You know, like there were a few things that kind of tilted it that way. The best unit on the field on Saturday was Ohio State's defense. And that's what really stood out. And, you know, they have one of the best fucking defensive players in the country. Like, it's not surprising. The way that they
Like
controlled
how
the
you
Mond.
came relatively out of nowhere, although obviously anyone who is at Ohio State was probably talented in the first place.
Who are we talking about?
Arvel Reese?
Oh, I was talking about Caleb Downs, but the speed that Ohio State has defensively and the feel, I'm not going to rule out that they were stealing signs or had game tape of the Huskies, because the amount that they were able to just seem like they knew everything we were doing it, both defensively and offensively before we were doing it. But that's part of just the effect of playing a good team like that.
Ohio
So.
State now third in FBI efficiency and third defensively. I think what stood out to me is just like there's a machine-like quality, like which I would associate with an NFL team, you know, much more so than even very many very good college teams. Like as good as UW was in the Kalen DeBoer era, you would never say they were machine-like because all the time they were needing to
It
barely
was smoke
beat
and
Oregon
mirrors. It
State.
was like smoke and mirrors. It was a little
Yeah.
sloppy. It was like,
They found some of that, they found some of that smoke and mirrors in Tuscaloosa lately, it turns out.
I they just really have Alabama's number, but or Georgia's
Georgia.
number. But
Yeah.
the okay, so
Just as they had Oregon's number.
third down efficiency, Ohio State 6 of 10, pretty good. Do you know what UW was on third down?
One of 13?
1 of 11.
Okay.
Third and fourth down combined 2 for 14. And I mean, that's it. That's the game,
Well,
right?
you got to count those together because obviously you don't get to third, fourth down without failing
I
on
guess
third
that's
down.
true. Yes.
So 11 times they got two third down and they only converted two of those, even when you include fourth down conversions. Whereas, did Ohio State have a fourth down conversion? They did on
They
the
were 1 for 2.
touchdown,
Yeah.
right?
They scored the touchdown on near the goal line, and then they didn't get the one on the first series. I mean, like, they're just a better team. Like that is something that I can accept. I was a little surprised after the game. I was a little surprised during the game that DeMond never got free, and it was still such a DeMond game. You know, like his ability to not throw incompletions is unreal.
It is
And
pretty wild.
when he's playing a team that isn't Ohio State, his ability to not run 13 times for negative 28 yards is different. Like there were some plays where it's like, fuck, he gets out of that against probably 120 other teams around the country and happened to face the one that he wasn't able to. Like the I thought UW's defense on the whole played pretty good in this game, considering everything. And we ran the ball pretty well too. I mean, running stats are so skewed because of the sacks and how many yards DeMond lost, but like they ran well with Jonah Coleman. I think Jed dialed up. Jed knew what type of game it was. You know, they probably should have gone for it on the first drive instead of punting. But aside from that, I think Jed dialed up a game where he's like, we're the underdogs. We have to go try to do some things to try to win this game. We have to be aggressive. I think they actually overthought it a little bit. They might have sold themselves like a hair too short on talent and instead could have played it a little bit more straight up. And obviously the greedy gross, like the fake field goal, just was a disaster. And I don't necessarily want to judge it outcome based, but it's one of those plays where it's like Ohio State was, they unflinched, right? They had everything defended on a fake field goal.
See, I don't know. I haven't watched that playback. I feel like it's hard to evaluate because if it evidently if the targeted receiver didn't know the play, then that
Is
raises
that
some
what the word
questions.
was that Deckard Graf did?
I
Or
don't know, but I'm
we're just
just
saying that because he didn't even look for the ball.
yeah. Like it's easy to like have it covered when they don't when the
But
defender doesn't look for
even
the
if he
ball
was looking for
all
the
the time.
ball, he still wasn't open.
Right, but it also suggests like maybe he wasn't running the route quite as hard if he wasn't, you know.
Sure.
I think there are some correlated things there. But yeah, I mean part of you know, there's an element of like process versus results that's like, oh, if Grady Gross throws a perfect pass and Decker DeGraff just happens to drop it, that's like a yeah, good process, bad results. If Decker DeGraff doesn't know the ball is coming, then there's something pretty fucking wrong with the process, even, you
Yeah.
know, if you did see something reasonable on tape that convinced you. The other thing that frustrated me about it was like, well, given the way that UW was moving the ball in the red zone, the net result of faking the field goal would probably have been a shorter field goal, which I mean that was at the edge of Grady Gross's range, is probably came into
Grady
Jed
Gross
Fish's
is
calculations.
up there with the, I mean, he was great. You know, he's been great all year. So Grady Gross is a bright spot for this team. I didn't leave it feeling bad about the Huskies. That's
Me
what I'll
neither.
say. I didn't even leave this game saying they can't compete for the playoff. Maybe the outcome later that night, really just a cock punch of a day. But it was like there were three things that I was cheering for, and none of those outcomes happened.
I checked out at Thriftway that evening, and there was a guy at the other in the check stand and wearing an Oregon shirt, and then proceeded to like spend a long time after finishing checking out telling like a knock-knock joke or something like that to the checker. So thankfully I was able to go around to another someone opened up another lane, so I was able to go around and not have to be stuck behind the Oregon fan telling a joke.
There was an Oregon fan telling a knock-knock joke to the checker at Thriftway. You found the worst human being on the face of the earth. You did it. So that, and then the roughing the passer, which, like, I mean, even you have to admit was a light roughing the passer.
Well, yeah, seeing the objective response to that has convinced me that yes, that was a very poor call.
And it was a devastating call for the Huskies, but like, I don't know. They just were better. Like, I can't say that that play cost them the game. I think
Exactly.
they might have been in a position without it where they could have maybe done something in the end, but they needed to score a fucking touchdown. There was no doubt in my mind heading into this game that they were going to score a touchdown. And to leave it with 6 points on two field goals was, it was a failure.
Well, one of the reasons that we were mad, you were mad at me going into the game, is that I said on our walk in to you and Luca that I would be happier losing like 42-35 than winning 6-3 because of the fact that Julian Sain just wasn't a good quarterback.
I mean, it was a stupid thing to say.
It probably also violated the Pelton Cast Golden Rule. I'll concede. But I do think that like the even when they weren't scoring points, the offense was better than I, even with scoring 6 points, the offense was better than I imagined in that scenario, but not as good as we were hoping it would be.
I mean, if you look at these numbers right now, I mean, you have to take out the 13 for negative 28. That's the number that you can't look at. But 18 for 22 for 173 yards, you're like, all right, I can live with
Pretty
that.
good.
13 carries for 70 yards. Adam Muhammad, 3 for 13. Bunch of receivers got involved. It all seems good. And it was just, they just handled DeMond. That was it.
They
They
handled
handled him.
DeMond's running, and then the Huskies, like they moved the ball. You know, I don't have this breakdown.
I mean, they had the ball at the 2-yard line, first and goal at the 2-yard line, and didn't punch it in. And that to me is like, that is more of a run of play thing, of a run of play failure, than even the roughing the passer affected them. Because if they score a touchdown there, the game does look different.
Yes, and I think my point is like, UW had been very good in the red zone against the weak competition that they had faced early this season. But this was an issue last year too. You go back to last year's Apple Cup and a bunch of other games. It probably was a factor to a degree during the Rutgers game. Some of the self-defeating penalties, as you said, it wasn't a lot of yardage, but the timing of those penalties on the second drive in particular, when they were backed up against their own goal line, had a chance to get out of it and instead have it called back for sideline interference, one that I haven't seen people really object to, but I also haven't seen explained exactly what happened on
We
that
don't, yeah,
play.
we do we even know what happened? It's one of
I'm
those
sure
games where
someone
it's like
knows.
shit was annoying, but they lost so badly that I don't want to go back and like feel bad about the whole game again to like analyze it.
Right.
I just want to never think about this game ever again.
Because the thing that penalties don't tell you is the yardage that you lost on the play that was wiped out. And a lot of the times,
Well,
like,
they
you
got
can't
the
really
yardage,
say
I
that.
think.
No, they didn't.
Oh, they
I mean, I
did.
guess maybe they
No, it was
did.
16-yard pass. No, that was before then. Washington penalty yards to the 12. Okay. I think they
Anyways,
still get that.
yeah, because it was still first and 10. You're right. I guess they did still get the yardage. But
I
anyways,
truly don't know what happened. And then Jed comes back and gets another one.
but a lot of times, like if it's like, oh, that hold wiped out a 35-yard run. Well, probably the reason there was the 35-yard run is because of the holding. The sideline interference on a play that was nowhere near the sideline did not factor into the
I got
play.
to look
I'm
this one up.
confident. And I tell you that one. Do you
No,
have to?
I'm like kind of re-mad about it again. Coach Fish's reaction to the sideline interference penalty.
Certainly, Jed Fish did not think it was a reasonable call.
I mean, I'm sorry, but even the other call, like Ryan Day, I don't know if Ryan Day gets called for that in the same way. Like there were
Don't
plays.
think Ryan Day runs onto the field in the same way.
It was the game was called a little bit harder on the Huskies. How about that? Than it was on
I think
Ohio
that's fair.
State.
And one of the things the roughing passer did is Ohio State, basically what Ohio State was able to do offensively, UW's defense, I do think, played quite well in this game. Particularly got to shout out Dylan Robinson for his efforts. With Tecario Davis unable to go, Ephesians Prysock was awesome in this one. Obviously matching up a lot with Jeremiah Smith, but Robinson had him as well. Ohio State was just able to matriculate the ball. It was consistently 4 to 7 yards, 3 to 7 yards every single play, and just enough to pick up a first down on a regular basis, even though there weren't a ton of chunk plays. And there were only two times in the game they got really behind the sticks, both because of holding penalties, and one of those got wiped out by the roughing the passer call. That's why it was so particularly devastating. So Huskies didn't drop far in offensive efficiency, according to FPI. They're seventh there, but now 98th in defensive efficiency. Damon Williams Jr., ninth in the country in QBR, down from second.
It doesn't radically change my perspective on the team. Look, they're the best team we're going to play all year. You know what I mean? Like that's Ohio State. Now, don't even. Ohio State is very, very good.
I mentioned that Ohio State is number three in FPI efficiency. I don't think you're going to want to look at the top of that particular leaderboard at the moment. Or for that matter, overall FPI, where they surpassed Ohio State as well. It's a Big Ten team. It's a team on the Husky schedule. I don't know if you'll guess who it is.
This team is better. It's a very good Ohio State team. That's and Julian Sain did make he didn't make a lot of great passes. I don't he's not a playoff winning. He might win a playoff game. They're not gonna win the championship this year with Julian Sain. Like it's just not happening. But he's not bad. He is
And I
not a
think
bad quarterback.
he will improve over the course of the season. This was his
Yes.
first road start, as we talked about at length. But I do think there was an element of like Ohio State was who we thought they were offensively, and the Huskies just
They
weren't
didn't
good enough
score. I mean,
offensively to
24
score
points.
to
If you would
take
have been like,
advantage.
if you would have told me before this game, Ohio State scores 24 points, do the Huskies win or do they lose? I'm saying we're winning. This was on us.
I would have given a lot more than 33% chances. I mean, and again, Ohio State's defense deserves a lot of the credit for that. But I
Yes.
do think there were enough, self-inflicted UW wounds that.
And just good defense. Like that's it's there's the self-inflicted wounds, and then there's just plain good defense that they did not let DeMond get free.
Yeah. I was prepared at one point when the Huskies were comfortably winning the yard or winning the yardage battle and behind 14-3 on the scoreboard to coin the term the fish for or the Jed fish for
To
outgaining the opponent
lose
and
the
losing the
game and
game.
outgaining. Well, hopefully that doesn't happen this weekend.
I know, hopefully it doesn't. But Maryland is a very interesting opponent. Do you want to talk about this weekend?
Yeah.
Okay, Huskies headed back east outside the state of Washington for the first time this year to play at Maryland, their first visit, their first matchup with Maryland since they became Big Ten rivals. Long time, you know, you can feel the intensity of the Big Ten rivalry between Maryland and UW. So they were 4-8 last season. They're coming off their first losing season since 2020. They had only one conference win over USC, but have started this year 4-0 against a weak schedule that ranks number 121 nationally per FPI, easiest among any Big Ten or SEC team. Their two FBS team wins were against teams ranked 116 or lower. Then they won 27-10 Saturday at Wisconsin, embattled Luke Fickell in Wisconsin
I know that's
in their
it's
Big
like
Ten
the
opener.
to have Wisconsin, a road game against Wisconsin, be on your schedule as one of the easiest schedules in the country is brutal
It's
times
a
for
change.
Wisconsin. Yeah.
It's a change. So FPI efficiency, which you know should be adjusted for opponent, really likes what they're doing. They're number 21 in the country, 13 spots ahead of the Huskies. They're just 71st in offensive efficiency, but 6th in defense, 12th in special teams. So this is going to be really the first big test for Maryland. It's interesting, like the market does not believe in Maryland. The Huskies are 6.5 point road favorites in this game, which is wild to me.
I mean, the market probably overestimated UW in the end against Ohio State.
Right. So part of the turnaround, four-star true freshman quarterback Malik Washington is off to a solid start. He's completing 60% of his passes for 7.7 yards per attempt with one pick so far. My ESPN colleague Billy Tucker, who runs Recruiting Nation, ranked him the best true freshman in the country thus far. Washington's only 14th in the Big Ten in QBR, but he's ahead of Drew Aller, notably. Completed 53% of his passes against Wisconsin, but did average 14.7 yards per completion in that one. So there were some big plays, pass for two touchdowns, ran for a third. He was recruited as a dual threat. We haven't really seen much rushing from him so far. He's just had 9 carries in the 4 games, albeit with a pair of touchdowns. I mean, I can't imagine that you would have seen Maryland given
No,
their
I've seen no
opposition.
Maryland. I've seen no Maryland, but I also see that four different people threw passes for Wisconsin, and three of them appear to be quarterbacks.
Oh no. One of them is Danny O'Neill,
That
but two of
is
them
true.
are not Danny O'Neill.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it may not have been dramatically worse for Wisconsin
One of them was a wide receiver, but like they literally were cycling through some guys here.
if longtime Seattle sports host Danny O'Neill were the one playing quarterback. I don't know if it would have been that much worse for Wisconsin. It's a balanced receiving attack for Maryland. Three receivers over 180 yards thus far, four with at least 10 catches. But I would say a concern for Maryland, and part of the reason the market is so high on the Huskies in this game, perhaps, they have not been effective running the ball even against this dreadful schedule. Their leading ball carriers are all under 4 yards per carry. They are last in the Big Ten in rushing yards per game, 16th out of 18 in yards per carry. So I think if you're drawing up the gameplay defensively for the Huskies in this one, it's take away the run entirely, make them one-dimensional, and put Malik Washington in a lot of difficult situations where he's got to create things, you know, against the whatever the Husky pass rush looks like without presumably Zach Durfee, who we haven't gotten an update on his injury, but does not sound like he's going to be back after leaving the
That is what
game.
I'll also say is the game. Ohio State started running the ball better after, and it's not necessarily Zach Durfee, but like, and maybe this would have happened naturally. Their offense moved a lot more yards in the second half. They were a better offense in the second half than they were in the first half. Durfee's out. They're without Dakario Davis. They're without Buda Olukda. This UW defense, which is not like a dominant defense talent wise to begin with, was embattled in that game. And to do what they did
A lot of
against
embattled. Kathy Engelbert's embattled, I think, right now. Another thing I noted in the Mariners hot takes from the season preview is that the Seattle Times had referred to Jerry Depoto is embattled. So he's now
oh,
unembattled.
retire bitch. If we're being honest, Seattle Times. The Takario looks like he's going to be back this weekend. Looks like there's a chance that Takario is back this weekend. How about that?
I mean, there's a better than chance than he played last week, but Again, with Dylan Robinson, it's no longer like something you're stressing about the same way.
No,
like
I think this UW secondary is borderline good.
Leroy Bryant looked a lot more effective. He was playing in the slot this game after being outside against Washington State and really struggling in that role. And what's cool about Dylan Robinson, besides for the fact that he's a true freshman doing this, is that he like brings the similar size that you were getting with Takario Davis opposite Ephesians Prysock. You're not losing that element of it, you know, whereas Leroy Bryant and the other options, Rayshon Clark should be back this week after he didn't play last week. They're not, you know, bringing the same size to the cornerback position.
The plays that Jeremiah Smith got free were all schemed up. It was not like downfield getting the ball to him. UW defended all of that stuff well.
Yep.
I mean, they were borderline perfect against balls downfield. So and if Maryland can't run, I feel pretty good about this UW secondary.
Yeah, it's going to be a low-scoring game. The Maryland defense has held opponents
to 2 points.
You
think it's going to be a low-scoring game?
Relative to UW, I guess. I mean,
yeah,
they did score 6 points last week, 24-6. But this is not going to be the Washington State game, is what I'm telling you. The Maryland defense has held opponents to 2.5 yards per carry, just one rushing touchdown while coming up with 16 sacks. That pass rush also led by true freshmen Sidney Stewart and Zahir Mathis, who have combined for 6.5 sacks thus far. They did allow 230 passing yards to Towson. I don't know, maybe Towson has a better passing attack than I realized.
It's an in-state rival, you know, you throw on the records when Towson meets Maryland.
Same as when, like, I mean, I guess when Eastern? UW.
Yeah, no, you kind of do.
They haven't really scheduled them since. I don't feel like Eastern is quite as stout without Cooper Kupp. Held Wisconsin to 6.7 yards per attempt. And just 1.5 yards per carry in a dominant defensive performance that included 6 sacks last week. So I don't know how many of those 4 different quarterbacks got sacked, but probably more than one.
Just 4 people with 2 passes, 3 quarterbacks.
You can get sacked even if you're not a quarterback.
That is true.
As long as you're throwing passes. One last note on Maryland. Mentioned their elite special teams in terms of FPI efficiency. Part of that, kicker Sean O'Hare, 10 of 11 on field goals, including 3 from 40 plus. So pretty impressive for a college kicker.
I don't care about any of these things.
Thanks.
Do you? I mean, like, do you care about anything that has happened with Maryland this season when they played at the FAU, Northern Illinois, Towson, and Wisconsin's 4 quarterbacks? Like,
I think you can read too little into it.
I guess the thing that I'm going to take away from this is that Vegas is probably smarter than I am on this game. How about that? Vegas probably knows more. I mean, you know, I think the FPI, right? Is this ESPN Analytics is mostly FBI. It has it like a toss-up game. And
yeah, I mean, it has UW is rated dramatically better because of their prior coming into the season. But when you factor in home field, yes, has it 53% UW, 47% Maryland.
It's a fascinating one because the teams that really gave UW trouble last year were the teams that can run the ball. And that is not what this Maryland team is. You know, it's not a classic, like, go on the Big Ten, go on the road in the Big Ten, get bullied by somebody. UW has not won a Big Ten road game ever. Is that true?
Has UW ever won a Big Ten road game?
I'm pretty sure they have not.
Yeah, I don't think so. We did not mention, by the way, the home winning streak coming to an end. We also didn't mention, like, part of the great vibes at the start of this game, Cal Raleigh, Julio Rodriguez, Brian Wu, and Emerson Hancock coming out to sound the siren at the start of this game. Cal and Julio firing up the crowd. It was a great time. Emerson Hancock was nominated.
I just want it. I want it back. Like, I want the game to happen again. It's one of those ones where you're just like, I just wish we could do this again.
I agree.
Because we're not going to get, like, every year in the Big Ten, we're going to get an opportunity like this. Pretty much.
Yeah, not every year. I mean, you know, presumably at some point the Huskies will not host the defending national champion. It seems inevitable. At some point, it's gonna not be the case.
Is the future football schedule is like it's out? You know,
yes,
we don't know what everybody's gonna be like year over year at this point, but we do know who we're going to be playing in Seattle, and like I think it's Penn State at home next year. Hosting, yeah, hosting Penn State. I mean, you know, hosting Indiana. Like, there are going to be opportunities for wins like this. They avoid Michigan next year. They avoid Ohio State next year. But Penn
But
State's
getting
good.
the
They're going to
number
be a
one
good
team in
team.
the country and the defending national champs, yeah, I mean, that's not still not going to be every year. By the way,
And
for
it
sure,
just
confirmed, Jed Fish does not have a Big Ten road victory, or UW in general.
So it's something to pay attention to. It has to happen.
It seems likely.
I have a healthy amount of nerves for this one, but also at the same time, I think they're going to bounce back after last week. It's just I think there are a lot of frustrated people in the building for obvious reasons. And Jed has to get better at this. He has to get better at the red zone. Like it was just a little shocking how they approached the red zone after the previous 3 weeks of the season.
I kept waiting when they brought in Brayden Sprite for the end around to him, and it just never happened.
I mean, like the carries up the middle to Jonah, like it, I think midfield is one thing, especially with the threat of Damon running. It just didn't work there. Like the line, as good as the UW line has been, and they still, I thought, were pretty good in this game. Like the UW line was not bullied in that game. It was a lot of Damon moving around, trying to scramble, not having receivers open, and then getting hit.
Which was a big difference, obviously, from last year playing these kind of elite opponents. The other thing we'll say, you mentioned, the way that Ohio State's offense got going in the second half without Zach Durfee. UW's offense also struggled a lot more in the second half without Carver Willis out
Yeah,
there at
was there
left
any update on
tackle.
Carver Willis?
Not yet.
I hate college football. It's so stupid. You want to be like a real fucking sport, you know what I mean? You want to take your private equity money and like go do the thing. Like, try having some standards in place.
I mean, they will do have injury reports. We'll get an update on Saturday.
On Saturday. Cool.
I mean, we'll probably get one before that, but we have not gotten one yet. Percentage chances of victory.
60%.
That's about where I am. Important question here. So we still don't know, as we mentioned earlier, where the Huskies will see the Mariners will be playing on Saturday, is what I mean to say. If those two games overlap, how are you apportioning your interest between the Mariners and the Huskies?
I am being completely honest with you. It's Huskies all the way.
Wow. This
Like,
is the guy who was upset after the Cal Raleigh home run to clinch the first playoff spot in 21 years
that's
because
what
the
I'm
Huskies
saying.
lost to UCLA.
That it's still true. When I am feeling it deep down, I didn't
Don't
spend two
tell the
decades
Discord.
not caring about the Huskies. You know what I mean? There has not
We
been a
went to
time.
every home game during a season where they went 0-12.
Like, if the Mariners are just bad, I'm not going to pay attention in August and September. You know what I mean? Like, there is a point where it's like I will curiously check in. This last weekend when they were playing the Dodgers, I saw basically none of it because I was like, I don't care.
Not much to Saturday night game.
So the Mariners are like still, you know, there's that feeling of like the head and the heart, not to reference a band, but like no relation. There is a difference between it. And I care about the Mariners, but I really care about the Huskies.
Well, that leaves the question. How much do you care about the Seattle Seahawks?
Hello.
The 3-1.
I will tell you, it's different than the Huskies. It's almost like this Ohio State game was like a cloud hanging over the entire week, where I was kind of just like, I just got to get through this stuff. Like I was at BMX on Thursday. I was half paying attention to the Seahawks. It was more like if the Seahawks had lost that game to the Cardinals, I would have been mad. More like no joy was going to come from that game. But as they were in the fourth quarter and things weren't looking amazing, I mean, I still really never felt like they were going to lose. But like if they'd blown it would have been more of like an anger than, and they kicked the field goal to win and it was just like, phew, okay, on to the next one. I don't, did you, were you in town or were you out of town for that game?
I was at dinner in Los
Okay.
Angeles and streaming this entire game. It was
Who are you with?
like with all of my ESPN colleagues.
Okay.
Mina was not there, if that's what you're asking. That's Mina
Anybody else
claims
care?
about the game. I
Yeah.
mean, people were like checking in for fantasy purposes or just,
It's so
what's
funny that
going
you're in
on,
like a
but
different sport. Because if you were at the NFL team, this is like a deal. You know what I mean? Any NFL game's a deal.
well,
But
they
you're at the
probably wouldn't
NBA
have
team.
scheduled the dinner
Yes.
during the game. Yeah. Yes. This is the second time that the game has been played during this kind of dinner in our preseason get-togethers. But the previous time they were on Monday night, and it was a little earlier in the season, so I think it was a bigger deal at that point. Yeah, but I once it was like there was like a period where we were like doing cocktail hour and mingling, and then it was like very difficult to mingle and watch the game. But once we sat down at the table, I could pop my phone on the table and follow along the rest of the way. But yeah, we're not going to get the most in-depth analysis on this one.
I mean, I
I learned
wasn't
about the
paying
Trey
attention
Benson injury today.
to like individual like points. It was sort of like I wasn't watching every play. I was casually checking, and it was Marco's birthday, so I was like, I had to be like there and focused on it. And I had like friends at the track and stuff, so I was kind of just like look monitoring the score more than everything. But the thing that was fr that I would have been frustrated about is this was a complete ass kicking in the desert that the Seahawks had. And for it to have even been this close was not unfair, isn't the right word, but it was kind of like, come on, people.
That's kind
You
of
know?
perplexing. I look at the stats and I do not totally understand it. Like, granted, the one of the turnovers by each team sort of canceled each other out because they literally happened on the same play and ended up more or less in the same point of the field when it completed the interception and the fumble there. But the Cardinals had more turnovers. The Seahawks averaged 6 yards per play to Arizona's four. They averaged 0.11 EPA per play to minus 0.6, 0.06, I should say. And yet somehow this was a 2020 game with 38 seconds left when the Cardinals scored the tying
This
touchdown.
is what I was telling you before, after week one of like, we're getting into regular season mode of football, and it's like college can be decided. That Husky game was decided in the third quarter. You know,
Or
like
28 seconds left, I should say.
the Husky game was decided in the third quarter. NFL games, if they are reasonably close, do not get decided until the fourth quarter. Like things get accelerated at that point, and it's partially the kickoffs, you know, that changes things. But really, it was a bullshit holding call on JSN. Which, have you seen this?
I'm not sure I know. I'm not sure I have.
Charbonnet runs for a touchdown. They call a hold on JSN, which is just like every angle I've looked at it at, I do not know what is going on. Jason Myers missed like relatively easy field goal, two drives from the Cardinals that they just didn't have at any other point of the game. And boom, it's a game that they needed a game-winning field goal to win. So
I mean, 53 is not that easy, but yes, it is a field goal you'd expect him to make more often than not.
it, in the desert too, like with no elements.
I like that the desert itself is a part of it, as if moisture affects your chances of making a field goal.
No, I'm just saying weather-wise, like nothing was
Yes,
affecting him in any
it's
way.
indoors is the biggest thing. I didn't know they had a replay mode on Gamecast. That's interesting. I mean, we're also, the Cardinals had a fourth and four on that final touchdown drive at midfield. And like, if they just miss that, the game is basically over. The Seahawks probably more or less run it out. And so we did get the excitement of Sam Darnold leading a game-winning drive in a remarkably short period of time, aided, as you said, aided on this one by the kickoff rules that gave them the ball at the 40, almost already in field goal
Also,
range.
the pass interference on Reek, which I haven't looked that closely at, but some people felt like it wasn't the right call, which was the first of the two touchdowns from the Cardinals. So it was kind of just like a few plays and a great catch by Marvin Harrison also.
I think Marvin Harrison's underrated. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is underrated. Marvin Harrison's probably appropriately overrated.
I don't know if he's underrated, but to me, this was kind of like, it's funny that the Cardinals are 2-2, but they feel dead in the water at 2-2.
I mean, that's partially this division.
It's the division. It's kind of like all the rest of these teams are going to keep winning games, because if you look at that schedule, there are a lot of wins on the schedule for the rest of them, even when they're starting Mac Jones. But it's kind of like, I mean, Kyler's 31, something like that. It's just, I mean, we'll see
That
if
can't be
Jonathan,
possible.
sorry, he's 28. Okay. He's not 31, but this should
Okay.
be Kyler's prime. And I'm not sure if Kyler's going to get better. This kind of feels like the Seahawks in that game It was a blow. It was an important body blow to the end of this particular Cardinals run. It was a weirdly important one for that. And we'll see, like, if
I'm
I think
not
if they
sure I
miss the
want to see
playoffs,
the end of that Cardinals run.
I mean, it's maybe, I don't know. I honestly can't tell you, but like, I think Jonathan Gannon is probably done as coach if they don't make the playoffs or play very solid. Like, there's talent there and it just hasn't really turned into much of anything. And that Kyler performance, like the 28 QBR, credit to the Seahawks, who are now number one in defensive DVOA. And Spencer Rattler, who's looked pretty freaking good against almost everybody else.
It's true. The Saints looked like a real team again last week. The thing is, not everyone can just go out and get a quarterback like Sam Darnold. You obviously need to, invest a really high draft pick or, trade multiple first round picks or, give out a $50 million a year fully guaranteed contract to get a quarterback like Sam Darnold on your team.
I'm telling you, the number one, I mean, there's, two quarterbacks this week. One of them's playing a lot better than the other one, right? Pedigree quarterbacks on their, I don't, for Darnold, it's like his, right?
It's at least fourth. It's probably
Jets,
fifth.
Panthers, 49ers, Vikings, Seahawks is fifth.
Yeah.
And Baker is Browns, Panthers, Rams, Buccaneers.
I
Is that
think
right?
so. Yeah.
Fourth. So two very pedigreed quarterbacks who've
Who
found their
overlapped
jobs
in Carolina, right?
very strangely overlapped in Carolina. I mean, I thought there was a quote last week after the Buccaneers win where he was like, Steve Wilkes was on the other side of the field. He's the one who like cut me when I was with the Panthers. And it's funny to think about players where it's just like, fuck that guy. Like we're trying to win. I'm like, there is somebody out there who's got serious beef with Steve Wilkes, and it's not Panthers fans.
PJ Walker started five games that season when the Panthers had both Mayfield and Darnold. His most recent NFL photo on Pro Football Reference has him in a Seahawks jersey, and I do not remember the PJ Walker
Wow.
Seahawks era at all.
It's like Roberto Kelly. Do you remember that person at all?
I remember Roberto Kelly. You're claiming he was on the Mariners, though?
He led the team in like win value added in the 1997 playoffs.
Apparently, PJ Walker was with the Seahawks for 2004 training camp.
2004? No.
In 2024, I'm sorry, is what I'm being meant there.
He was just born.
He would have been nine.
Okay, fair enough.
Still probably should not
I
be
mean, I
playing in
was
the
I
NFL.
not saying this when the Seahawks signed? We both were in on the Darnold signing as it happened.
I mean, still wasn't in enough.
I mean, I don't even know if I was pretty all the way in, but I don't know if I was in enough. He's by PFF, I think the number one rated quarterback in the NFL.
Sam Darnold is who Geno Smith fans thought Geno Smith was.
I don't even want to talk about Geno. Oh, he's third now. Okay, Darnold is third at PFF.
I don't
Paltry.
either. I'm just saying
I don't want to
that
talk about
particular
Geno
point.
anymore because it's just like I don't care about Geno. Why would we be talking about Geno Smith?
We're not talking about Geno Smith. We're talking about Geno
Okay,
Smith
we're
truthers.
not talking about the fucking series that Russell Wilson came in and I was like, oh no, bring back Dart, please. He came in and it was just like, I'm sure you were not monitoring that Giants game at all, but.
I was aware it was happening, but it was
I
not my
felt
primary
sick to my
focus.
stomach as a Giants fan. Like, I was like, bring me back my boy Dart. The Giants are so much fun. Also, as a big Anakin
I heard. Yeah, I'm aware. Anyways, should we talk about Baker
Yeah, let's talk about Baker.
after this detour? Because he was really good last season, when he completed 71% of his passes for 7.9 yards per attempt, both career highs, threw for 4,500 yards, second consecutive Pro Bowl appearance, and then for the third consecutive season, lost his offensive coordinator, the second consecutive season, that OC getting a head coaching job. Dave Canales got the Carolina job in 2024, and then Liam Cohen, the Jacksonville job last year. Liam Cohen, very much in the news right now, now has a first-time play caller in new OC Josh Grizzard, and off to a slow start. He's down to 60% completion percentages, 6.5 yards per attempt, has thrown just one pick thus far after a league high 16 last year, and yet Baker Mayfield also led game-winning drives in the final minute of each of their first three games, as the Buccaneers won those by a combined 6 points before falling just short against Tampa Bay or against Philadelphia on Sunday to fall to 3-1. Still atop the NFC South as they bid for a fifth consecutive division title.
I mean, it's the NFC South. And I think the thing to pay attention to here is who the Buccaneers have played in those games. The Texans picked up their first victory this last week against the Titans. We're gonna give that a we'll see. The Jets look terrible. The Falcons might be fine. Like, there's nothing impressive about those. And even that Eagles game, like, I think stats-wise, it probably looks closer than it was. I mean, they outgained the Eagles by about a billion yards. But I will tell you, I watched that game, a lot of it on Red Zone, and it was not actually as close as it is.
Yeah, I mean they were way behind at halftime, certainly. It
Well,
did feel like they had a real chance at some
but
point in that though.
you're not going to have that many one play 77 yard drives
Well, that is
or
true.
four play 86 yard drives with a 72 yard touchdown pass. So, I mean, that right there is basically the difference in yardage in the game, you know, those 149 yards. Like, so, and it's two plays that people broke. Like, the Igbuka touchdown was, it was a short completion, not a short, it was a good completion that he made a good play on. The Bucky Irving one was a legit great play by Baker to find Bucky downfield. But, like, it's shit that Seahawks are not going to give up.
It's going to be interesting to see what the Seahawks can do defensively here because the Buccaneers are still 10th in drop back EPA despite that decline from Mayfield that I talked about. The bigger issue for the Buccaneers offensively, where they're 18th in DVOA, has been their rushing game, which ranks 28th in EPA per play, just behind the Seahawks. Bucky Irving has averaged 3.3 yards per carry after 5.4 is a rookie. Played through a lower body injury on Sunday, and Mike Garafolo of NFL Network reported Wednesday that he is gathering opinions on the injury. Would be a big loss
He's
in
still in
the
a walking
passing
boot right
game.
now.
Yes, I didn't put that in the notes. Big loss in the passing game where he's averaging 10.2 yards per target while catching all 19 of them so far. That's very unusual to see for a running back in a major contrast
Yeah, but
from
take out that
Rashad White.
one reception. I know it happened, but like,
Still, that's only, I mean, I guess it's less than 4 yards per target. He's even six, you know, something on the other targets would be pretty good for a running back. But Rashad White has not been a factor in the passing game. He's at 3.4 yards per target, but has been more effective than Irving on the ground. We've been talking about him regularly, but Emeka Ebuka making his homecoming to the Puget Sound area has already emerged as their top receiving threat with Mike Evans sidelined by a hamstring injury. Ebuka has 282 yards, four touchdowns, leading all rookies in both categories. He's just ahead of Tetaroa McMillan in receiving yards. Chris Godwin Jr. returned from an ACL tear on Sunday, caught just 3 of 10 targets for 26 yards, which seems impossible. Left tackle Tristan Wirfs also made his season debut after arthroscopic knee surgery ahead of training camp. The Tampa Bay pass defense rates a little below average overall, have been outstanding on third and fourth downs, allowing the second lowest EPA per play on those in the NFL. Opponents converting just 34% of the time in third and fourth down situations, with 6 Tampa Bay sacks on 43 dropbacks. They're number 4 overall in pass rush win rate. 8 players have at least one sack, including our old friends Greg Gaines and team leader Vita Vea. So this kind of sets up an interesting strength on weakness in terms of early down passing, where the Seahawks are the best team in the NFL and the Buccaneers have been below average defensively.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of game that you hope that, you know, Clint is going into this game with the right mentality and of getting some of those early down passes, the motion, everything like that. You know, like they held Saquon in check, but also so is everyone this year. And
I
it
mean,
does
yes,
feel
but
like,
overall, number one in opponent EPA per play on rushes, number two in success rate. They have yet to allow 100 rushing yards to a team in a game this season. So,
what is the
probably not the week the Seahawks run game gets going.
What was the number? I don't know if they still do the curse of 370 or whatever. What was it for the playoffs?
Like, including the playoffs?
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe 450? He can't be that high though, can it? I
I mean,
don't.
he had about 430 carries last year, and it's like,
But was
sayonara.
370 carries or touches?
I thought it was carries, because also, yeah, if you're including touches, it's a lot. I mean, that's a different conversation, but it was nice knowing you, Saquon. But like the, I'm not taking a ton away from that right now, and how they kind of controlled things in this game. Like the Eagles handled that game in every way, and also defensively, aside from those two lapses, like they really clamped down on Baker. I mean, he was at just over 50% completion percentage, and they gained almost nothing on any of those completions to anybody else. So I think I kind of see the Seahawks defense doing something similar. The pass rush is going to get off. And, you know, like those Rashad White, four receptions for 29 yards, Chris Godwin, three for 26, a couple for Sterling Shepard. They're not getting down. Sadly, Kate Otten, the three for nine. They were having a hard time getting the ball to their playmakers. And if Bucky is out, it is especially dangerous territory for the Buccaneers. So, can the Seahawks move the ball in this game, get some of those early down passing? I just don't want them to go into it thinking we're going to run the ball against them. I am sure that they're aware of this information that we're aware of. Whether they apply it, I don't know. Pete Carroll was aware of a lot of information. I'm sure of that fact. But whether that a knowledge of that information outweighed his need to do it is something else. And there's a little bit of an inkling of that in Seattle. So,
But I don't think there is. Do you feel like they ran the ball excessively on Thursday?
I think they might have run the ball a little excessively, yeah.
I suppose. And they definitely did not run the ball well. It's not a Ken Walker the third issue. It's not a Zach Charbonnet issue. It is a team issue. But you know who's coming in to save the day?
Oh, yes.
Miles Gaskin,
I mean,
fresh
I
off
think
his Husky Legend appearance on Saturday.
in the end, Ken Walker was like fine in that game. It wasn't terrible.
I've seen the EPA. I
There's
don't
one
think it
runner
was
who
fine.
matters in this backfield. It is Myles Gaskin, tentatively. You know who the one runner is that matters for them, though.
Sam Darnold?
Sam Darnold!
Scrambling Sam?
Scrambling Sam! Mono be damned. Sam Darnold is looking fast out there.
I think he's recovered from the mono now. It's
Mono
been many
be
years,
damned.
many teams.
I love seeing Elijah Arroyo involved in the offense as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. That things are feeling very good. Vibes are high. It's going to be a fun day in Seattle on Sunday. And this game, even though it is two, the Seahawks are not division leaders, but two teams that.
They're co-division leaders. The Niners lost. They're tied for first.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because we haven't lost to the Rams. Oh no, we are not. They're the division leaders.
You don't apply tiebreaks at this point
Still,
in the season.
sure, fine. I don't know if this game is as close as it seems, is what I'll say. What was the spread on it?
It's pretty close, 3.5 for the Seahawks. Now that was before I think the report that
Still 3.5.
Baker had missed. It is still 3.5. Baker had sat out practice today. He did tell reporters in Tampa afterwards that he feels fine. So,
No, we don't. Ex-Panthers Mayfield Darnold won't reminisce in Carolina days. Not
well,
surprised.
specifically what Baker Mayfield was asked is whether they would reminisce on the good old days, and Baker responded, "The what days?" Which is
Like
outstanding.
Baker. I'm down for it.
Oh, gotta like Baker. Yeah.
This Seahawks team is just better than the Buccaneers. I mean, you look at them DVOA wise, like if you were just to look at this game DVOA wise between the two teams and look at who's home, Seahawks are a touchdown favorite at least.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Seahawks are still, and probably the fact that the last game got as close as it did left them in prove it territory to
They
the
are. This
NFL at
Seahawks,
large.
they are going. Sam Darnold is going to be in prove it territory until somehow he's overrated. But, like,
Can't wait.
yeah, no, that's how it goes. Somehow Daniel Jones has managed to get into appropriately rated. Maybe he's always been overrated his whole career, and he just finally got good. But if they're able to keep doing what they've been doing, it's one of those things where you're like the third downs, the big passes that they've had, you feel like this might go away at some point, and like the offense will probably be worse than it was the couple of weeks against the Steelers and the Saints, but they're gonna gain yards here, and I think defensively it's going to be a really good game for the Seahawks. So,
Yeah, I like the matchup from that standpoint. Percentage chances of victory.
75%.
75%? Wait, I needed a second to process that. It's been a long day. I don't know. I'm probably like 65%. Can you talk me into that?
I'm excited to see it. That's where we've gotten to with the Seahawks is I'm in the territory of it's fun to watch them play. And that has not been territory we've been in that many times, where it's like, no matter what, I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah,
Any
I
update on
agree with
Nicky
that.
Manori?
Yeah, he's expected to play this week. He
Oh,
practiced on
hell
Wednesday.
yes.
Looks like they may not have DeMarcus Lawrence this week, but not presumably a long-term injury for Lawrence. Yeah, and again, you will be able to attend this one and still watch the Mariners game afterward. Thankfully, that worked out.
It's going to be a fun weekend in Seattle
Oh,
sports.
special guest, third Felton brother Mateo has popped
Mateo's
in.
still awake. Do you have anything to say about this? You need to go to sleep? Okay.
Ask Mateo what he thinks about the Phillies' chances against the Dodgers.
Who's going to win between the Phillies and the Dodgers? You're hoping Dodgers.
What?
What do you
This
think
is
when I casually said Saquon's career was over earlier? You hate it? Career is obviously not over. In his prime.
In his prime is a bold take. I mean, I guess he was last year.
Well, I waved goodbye to
Mateo or Saquon?
that was Saquon. I'm excited to see Nicky Manori that again, though. I mean, it was literally like one play, and we were like, hell yeah, and then poof.
Well, I don't know. Is he going to play at this point? I guess is the question mark because, obviously they were looking at him in a nickel role early in the season. But like Josh Jobe has so thoroughly claimed one of the three spots when the Seahawks go nickel. And there's even talk about, I don't know how much this is just like promoting competition as much as opposed to a legitimate thing. Darren Kinder did not play any snaps defensively on Thursday, but of him challenging Reek Woolen for one of those three spots when the Seahawks go nickel. So, like, Nick Amonworth has a lot of guys to beat out at this point to get on the field, unless it's going to be as a backup at safety.
Are they going to be playing their second round pick 34 draft pick that they guaranteed a salary to and traded up to select when he is just back from injury after making a good play in his first play? What do you think the answer is to that?
I mean, but the whole point is that, like, not that Reek Woolen was a high draft pick or anything, but like the organization had a lot invested in him at a certain point, and
Pick
they have
35.
clearly put him behind Josh Jobe at this point, who was a guy that they picked up, in training camp.
Do
So
you think the organization has put Reek Woolen behind Josh Jobe?
I 100% think that.
It's
You
an
saw the Reek
interesting.
Woolen trade talk, right? Like, I think
Yeah,
that's still
but
inflated,
when you
let's say.
describe it that way, that's at taking out any of the performance on the field. Like Nicky,
But Joshua did the performance on the field.
yeah, you're saying ahead of Emanuori,
Yeah.
they're gonna find a way to get him on the field.
I mean, there may be some packages, maybe some, it's like a hybrid where, a hybrid big nickel in situations where, you still want to keep more size on the field, but
The player coming out of the
I mean,
draft.
it may be the guy who's actually vulnerable here is not, any of those players. Maybe it's, the second linebacker spot next to Ernest Jones the fourth.
Could be.
But I mean, I don't think you like Luis Arroyo is playing plenty, but he's not the Seahawks starting tight end.
The player who coming out of the draft, Mike McDonald, and I'm sure he would say the same thing, was most excited about in this entire draft to play with was Nicky Minori.
I think he also recognized that there was a certain degree of project to Nick Emanuori, that it's not about day one.
Reek is
And
rated
that
153rd
also,
of 164 quarterbacks by PFF.
I think that's totally fair. I'm saying that Darian Kendrick is the one who has two interceptions this season, is the guy who's next up there, not Emanuori, who also, by the way, did miss like 3 weeks of practice that's going to
We'll
set
see.
back
They
his development.
may ease him into it a little bit, but they're going to find a way to get him on the field.
If you put the over under at 9.5 snaps defensively on
Over.
Sunday, I'm taking the under.
Really?
Yep.
Nine. I'll be counting each one.
Yeah.
You're gonna be in fucking France, and I'm gonna be like, tally number two.
I won't be there. I'll be on the plane. I'll be monitoring along.
That's the third snap for Nick Emanuori, thank
Actually,
you.
at least half the game, I'm going to be in SeaTac, so I'm pretty sure I can find a TV somewhere.
Oh, that's snap number four. Take that, ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton. This will
Yeah.
ruin your trip to France.
You're gonna have to
You
keep
took the
count of them.
under.
You're gonna have to keep count of them in French so that I can learn French
Oh,
numbers
un, deux, trois.
after draw.
I actually don't remember 1 through 10 in French anymore.
Oh no.
I know quatorze.
All that. Wow, thanks you too. Oh dear. That's probably a
Means
sign
four,
we
right?
should. That's probably a sign that we should wrap this up.
Well, this is the last that we're going to be seeing you.
I said there's going to be no pods the next 2 weeks. I can't rule out that there's going to be any more pods this week. Just don't want to rule anything out.
It's like I don't have any choice in that.
You're saying you wouldn't potentially want a podcast on Saturday if there's a thrilling game one of the ALDS?
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Well, if that doesn't happen, this will be the last we'll be seeing of you for a couple of weeks. Obviously, people still engage in the Discord. If you're not on the Discord, what even are you doing? Everything is happening there. The conversation is fast and furious, and especially during a lot of these games, and I'm sure during the Mariners playoffs, definitely will be.
Oh, like the baseball discussion is just out of hand, even like during a Dodgers game. It's really
You
too
seem
much.
like contemptful about that.
Well, I try to read everything and it's every post, and it's very
So
difficult when it
many
goes too
things. If you
fast.
want to go in there and ex express your feelings about Geno Smith for some reason, there are takers. So
We love we welcome all the different viewpoints. If you want to go to the
Mateo's going to
PeltonCast
be
Instagram.
back on the Discord in a tiny bit. He says, when you get a new iPad.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you want to
If you've been
follow
missing Mateo, like you're going to miss us these next couple of weeks.
the if you want to follow the Peltoncast Instagram, maybe you'll see some baguettes on there, some croissants.
Hurry up with my damn croissants.
Or maybe you'll come back from France and start pronouncing it croissant.
Oh, God. I know that you will.
On that note.
MVP signing off for the next couple of weeks.
A real MVP with Solo Pod. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Point.
I
Don't have it in me.
knew it.
So I literally technically do not know how to do it. So if the website was broken with you handling the website, imagine how broken the
Well,
website would be
that's a good point. You raise a fair point on
with
that
me
one.
handling it.
I mean, if you
Why
send
was
me some audio, I will edit, find some time to edit it. I think I can find that.
if I solo go just record, get on the
Phil Simmons
microphone and
style?
send you the I'm not gonna do that. I hate when he does that. When people do the monologue at the beginning and you're just like, can you just start talking to a guest?
There's a reason the format is what it is.
I'm just gonna go record 5 minutes of myself talking about a classic burrito from Taco Time. But can you just drop this into the Talking Taco Time pod like you did with your sandied umbrella?
It just would have been weird to not acknowledge the fact that the news was out there by the time the podcast was published.
Did you make it really like seamless?
I mean, I wanted people to be aware that it was like dropped in. It wasn't, like I was trying, I put over, like I dubbed the voice and said, Sandy Brondello fired by the New York Liberty.
A chat GPT that takes for the next week.
Maybe you just have to have AI provide my position. It just says
Yeah.
regression to the mean. Things are never as good or as bad as they seem, etc.
What would, hold on, would Kevin Pelton think about the Seahawks defeating the Buccaneers 28-17? Let's see what it has to say.
I agree that'd be a plus.
Searching the web. I can't find any specific commentary from Kevin Peltner, who is primarily an NBA writer analyst, about a hypothetical Seahawks versus Buccaneers NFL game. So I'll project what his take might be based on how data-driven analysts might approach it. If the Seahawks beat the Buccaneers 28-17, here's how Kevin Peltner, this is a quote, the analyst might break it down. Number one, efficiency and execution over volume. Pelton
Okay.
might emphasize that a 28-17 win suggests Seattle did more with less. Clean drives, few mistakes, good situational play. He'd dig into third down conversion, red zone efficiency, turnover margin, and perhaps expected points added differentials. Defense is the backbone.
Did it actually say expected points added
Yes.
differentials? No.
Holding Tampa Bay to 17 points is a statement. He'd highlight how Seattle's defensive schemes, pressure coverage, run defense. This is like way too much analysis than we actually do,
Oh,
but
no.
might have tilted the game. He'd likely examine pass rush impact, pressures allowed, and coverage breakdowns. He wouldn't. sustainable versus fluky.
Ruled
Pelton would ask, is this a true win? Or was Seattle fortunate in some metrics, e.g., turnover luck, opponent drops, special teams? He'd compare stats to box score, whether underlying metrics, yards per play, explosive play differentials support that margin. Implications for the season. God, there's so much more. He discussed what this means in the larger context, playoff odds, division positioning, momentum. If Seattle looked dominant, he might raise expectations. If it was a sloppy game, he might caution not to overreact.
I love to caution not to overreact.
That's enough, ChatGPT. I had to do it. They sort of understand ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton, but I don't know if they can really capture his true essence if we're being honest.
My true essence being traveling to France during the Mariners playoffs.
Okay, thanks for listening. So yeah, just type that into Chat GPT to get Kevin Belton's analysis. I don't think it's gonna have anything to say about me. It'll probably include something negative about Ichiro. This is a new wrinkle. It's post pod on the Pelton cast of Talkin' Taco Time, and you just said you think you're going in wildly unprepared for this interview. What is the questions are, do you have favorite, like, what are your taco time credentials? Like, what sort of things do you think you need to have prepared? Have you eaten taco time before?
I'd like to have some background on our guests. You don't think I'm coming with fresh details on our guests and their Taco Time affiliations?
No, I don't.
You know,
They tell us,
this is
we ask
why.
them at the beginning what their taco time credentials are.
I mean that is true. That is literally one of the
Literally, you're
questions.
like, you think I don't go in with information that we're going to ask later and find out?
I'm pretty sure, like when we interviewed Luke Burbank, I dropped some research that I had done. I
I
looked
don't
at,
think you
or like
did.
Jake One's tweets. I definitely
Like you're
looked up Jake
Nardwar
One's
coming at him, like
tweets.
with.
Oh, like my like shot there.
I
You
don't.
claimed you liked Taco Bell. What changed?
Who is that? I don't even know who that person is.
Is a writer for The Atlantic who's known for his Q and A's.
Oh. Who's down what?
Friend of the pod,
Oh, okay.
known for his Q and A's.
Known for his Q&As.
Yeah.
Like gotcha Q&As.
Certainly, the most recent one was.
Oh, okay. Cool.
There was one last week that is the reason his name is circulating right now.
I see.
Big Houston Rockets fan though.
Oh, sorry.
So,
Sorry about the Van Vliet news.
you think the Storm don't listen to this pod? I guarantee you that Isaac Shotner does not listen to this pod. He's a friend of the pod.
I
No
love
one
that that's a
listens to
reference
the
to
pod.
something. I guess that'll be on the same podcast.
Yeah, it'll be on
It's
the same pod.
confusing.
Yeah. A bit a while ago. Hopefully, you still remember.
We're right in the middle of one. You're not going to drop the Talkin' Taco Time at the end of the Pelton cast.
No, the Talkin' Taco Time will not be out until
What day can
probably
we
next
have
Monday.
a process question? First off, you're leaving during, I don't know what Halloween season is like. Maybe it's good in France. I'm not sure. But
Oh, now I'm going to look up on Google Translate how you say Halloween in French.
Halloween. We're good. You don't have to look it
Oh,
up.
it is actually, it's Halloween.
There you go. No, I told you how to pronounce it. I don't know why there's a J in there.
How many
That's
years did you take?
I am. I took, well, it was 1 year of community college, which they count as 3 years.
Okay. Who's they? UW?
Like all colleges count a semester or
Oh,
whatever.
because it's three different quarters.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I took three
What did you
quarters
take in
of.
high school? Did you take Spanish in high school?
I did take Spanish in high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You successfully advised me on explaining something in French that I asked about after the Husky game on Saturday.
Wait, did I actually?
Yeah, vis-a-vis. I mean, I don't know. I didn't check it out, look it
Oh,
up
yeah,
whether
no, don't
you were
research it.
correct. But I
No,
was
that one, I
curious why
think that
you
one,
pronounced.
I just, I know, I think I was winging it. Remember when you were
Oh
like, people say a lot of things? People just, what was
no.
it?
People say a lot of things.
I was gonna say people say a lot of things, then we're gonna transition to Husky football.
Duffman says a lot of things.
Was really hoping that would have been a natural transition to Husky football.
Oh man.
Because
Oh
I
yeah, that
definitely
one.
said a lot of things.
Oh boy.
So what are your plans over there? Also, what day do you get back? What are our podcast plans gonna be? Have? That's
Get
more
back
important.
October 19th.
Okay. What day of the week is that?
That is a Sunday ahead of the Seahawks Monday Night Football game against the Houston Texans.
So we're not podcasting next week.
We will go 2 weeks without a podcast.
The Mariners
But
will
one of
have
those weeks, you will get a talking taco time.
won the AL Division Series at some point in here. Game four is the eighth. One, two, yeah, three, four. Okay. Off on the ninth, and then the 10th would be game five.
So on the 10th, obviously it's not conflicting because the times are very wildly different. I'm going to see the French national team play against Power Azerbaijan.
Azerbaijan. When is what are they playing a friendly against Azerbaijan?
No, that's it's World Cup qualifying.
World Cup qualifiers.
Like it's a real match.
How much are those tickets?
It's like 80 euros, I think, somewhere in that
Oh, that's
range.
not bad. Where do you buy tickets to see the French national team play?
On the French national team website?
You just go on there, they're not sold out or anything.
No, tickets are like shockingly available. I mean, I even checked back lately, but there were a lot of good tickets still left.
I guess I'm not that shocked that the French peoples are not like they play real shit. You know, this is not like the Mariners made the playoffs one time. Like they've won the World Cup.
I mean, I told you last time I was kind of disappointed in the atmosphere, frankly, watching the Italian national team take on Belgium in Nations League. So we'll see. We'll see what the French bring here for Azerbaijan.
I don't think it's going to be much.
But just, the key is hopefully Mbappe plays. So
Do you cheer for France when you're there?
no.
Really?
I mean, it's my hated rival. Like if it
Okay.
was, I don't know what I mean. Spain, I don't feel like the same level of hatred for is
Are
an
you going to
international
scout
soccer
them then,
power.
or you're just going for the human experience of being in a thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the thing to do.
I agree, it's a thing to do.
Going to scout the Louvre, but
Are you
could
going to
go there
the
too. I mean, yeah, you don't go to Paris and not go to the Louvre.
Yeah, fair enough. Just like you don't go to France and not see the national team play against Azerbaijan. Okay, so then the second week will be ALCS. Do you know when that ends?
I don't, but I believe it extends beyond my return or.
Okay. Right, because game one probably starts if game the ALDS game one is probably Sunday the 12th, right?
And this information is readily available for the record here, but let's see here. The ALCS is scheduled the 12th through the 20th.
Okay, so like they'd have to get to game seven. Game
No, I'd be
six is the
back
day you
for game
return.
six because
Game
we're
seven
back
is.
midday.
This isn't the NBA. They don't make this shit take like 2 months. I just want you to know. Like they actually play games.
I understand how the playoff bracket works.
Okay, but it's not like they're just like making content to have 3 days off for ESPN to talk about. Like they're trying to place the sport sometimes. So you're going to basically miss all of the ALCS too. Well, you'll be back to preview the World Series.
I'm just like, why are we even, so many things have to happen.
Yep.
I'm not even convinced the Mariners are going to make the ALDS. And they got a bye.
Fair enough.
Are we going to wrap this up so we can record our other podcast?